I believe in my powers.
I believe in my powers.
I believe in the powers of my teammates.
I believe in the powers of my teammates.
I trust in my powers.
I trust in my powers.
I trust in the powers of my teammates.
I trust in the powers of my teammates.
Somebody get this big walking carpet out of my way.
Look, okay, just get any blunt objects together, all right? Get cornered, bash him in the head. That seems to work out.
Now, what are we, a team? No. We're a chemical mixture that makes chaos.
Gentlemen, I'm Agent Carter. I supervise all operations for this division.
The needs of the many outweigh the needs of the few.
And
angels of love!
Welcome to the Skippy and Fanny Show.
Living like this is torture. We're just ghosts.
I'm Sean.
I'm Julia.
I'm Jen.
I'm Rachel.
And I'm Trish.
And we're here to do a very special torture cinema episode on Aeon Flux. Yay!
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 I know Jen is super excited about this one.
I was, and then I watched it again.
Oh no! And the veil fell from your eyes, and you suddenly realized it was terrible?
Not so much terrible. But I'll get into that.
I was so looking forward to Jen's gleeful delight at watching a torture cinema movie that she thinks is wonderful, because usually that's what happens.
My husband thinks that we need to do a better job of curating the list. He's actually very angry that this movie is on the list. Even after rewatching it.
No, it deserves to be here.
It does.
It has a 10% on Rotten Tomatoes.
Like, it's hard not to think it belongs on the master list. Come on. So we're trying to talk about Aeon Flux, but before we get into that, even though we've kind of already started, we do have to talk about what we're all drinking. So, Julia, what are you drinking?
Oh, you guys, fall has come to New England and the weather is cooling off and it is so glorious. So I took this opportunity to break out the spiced chai and Jameson's and it's so delicious.
One of my students is from New England, and he was like, well, Florida's starting to get nice because the temperature, like, dropped, like, 5 degrees, so it went from, you know, 89 to 84. And he's like, it's starting to get nice. And I was like, oh, honey, it's never going to be cold. Jen, what are you drinking?
I am drinking the Levity Amber Ale from Odell Brewing, I believe, a Colorado brewing company, and it's quite delicious.
Rachel, what are you drinking?
So, I too am drinking a local brew. I'm drinking a Tommyknocker Jack Wacker Wheat, which is American unfiltered wheat ale with a hint of citrus because it's fermented with lemongrass.
I feel like it'd be a really exciting job just to be the guy who comes up with the names of beers.
Oh, my favorite is still there's a beer I don't think it's from Colorado, but it's from somewhere close by called Bitter Bitch.
There's also a beer called Arrogant Bastard. I feel like you should drink those together.
Oh, I have had Arrogant Bastard. It is some hoppy stuff. Wah!
All right, Trish, what are you drinking?
Kavita Master Brew Kombucha. Tart cherry flavor.
Ooh. That sounds like really, really, really expensive.
It was on sale.
That is what torture cinema deserves.
Yeah, we don't spend, like, good money on this. Come on now. No. Well, great. Well, I am drinking Mike Martinez's own cider.
Like Mike Martinez made it?
No, I lie. That's not what I'm drinking. I just really wish he would make a cider and send me some. So if he listens to this episode, I want him to know that I want to be able to say that on air and have it be true. No, what I'm actually drinking is, like, some sort of cherry lime soda with Pimm's.
I mean, that's delicious. That sounds good.
It is very good. Yeah, no, Pimm's is like the greatest thing in the world.
Yeah, we're done with Pimm's season here. Pimm's and gins and tonics, those are all summer drinks, and we're clearly into the nice warm beverage season.
I beg to differ. There is no season for Pimm's. Pimm's is a year-round festivity of joy.
Pimm's is always delicious, but like when you live in a place that has actual seasons, it's super nice when it's cool out to drink a warm beverage. I'm just saying.
I was going to say, Sean, actually, the problem is just you live in a place that has no season other than hot, still hot, even hotter construction.
You have hot, still hot, even hotter, and oh my God, why have I moved to hell?
Well, no, I live in north central Florida, so I have, it's okay, hot, hotter, hottest, oh my god, my balls are literally on fire, but they can't be on fire because it's so freaking humid that nothing is on fire. That's basically the temperatures in Florida.
So because you're in northern Florida, does that mean you're more like in the devil's armpit as opposed to on his grundle?
I would say that Florida, all of Florida is sort of like America's penis. And so the more north you get, the more like tucked into that little recess you get.
So I have a friend who works in schools, and like they tell the kids, if you need an adult, raise your hand. And now all of us, whenever something happens that we're like, what is happening? We raise our hands and we're like, I need an adult. And that's how I feel right now. I need an adult, guys.
Sorry, I don't think we have any present.
But the problem is, this is more interesting to talk about than this movie.
So. Exactly!
Yes, which parts of the human anatomy are the states of the United States?
All right, so should we actually bite the bullet and get into the movie, though?
Yes, but I do want to say one little, like, nice thing that isn't actually about the movie, but, like props to the late Pete Postlethwaite, who is no longer with us.
That's super sad.
You know, he's one of those faces that, like, people remember, you know? They always remember that man's face because he's in all kinds of things and he's just wonderful. All right, so let's move in. We'll go and do this movie. So who would like to tell us what this movie is about?
Okay, so really quickly, like, basically in this world of the movie, in 2011, a disease wipes out 99% of the population. And now, like, everybody else who's survived is living in one city 400 years in the future. And it is like a utopian, dystopian government-controlled society. And there is an underground faction of rebellion against the government control called the Monikans, who, for some reason, don't like the government, want to take it over. People also are having disturbing dreams that they don't understand, and some people seem to keep being killed by the government and or go missing, which seems problematic.
Understatement of the episode.
our hero, Charlize Theron, long may she reign, is Aeon Flux, and she's one of the underground rebels, and she sets out to kill the president of, or like the leader of the government. But when she gets there, she finds out that like she has weird memories attached to him and she doesn't understand them. Well, it turns out she's actually a clone of his dead wife who died during the disease. And surprise, everybody in the society is a clone because nobody can get pregnant anymore. So they just keep cloning the same DNA over and over again. It turns out that his brother was trying to mastermind a plan to take the government down because he wanted to take total control, and he was trying to block the wife's DNA from being recloned, but the keeper, Pete Postlethwaite, made sure that she could be recloned because he knew that she was the only person who could get through to the government leader and help him fix things. And he was trying to actually help women get pregnant, which was starting to work, but the government kept killing them. And so in the end, in a dramatic climax, Charlize Theron convinces a lot of the rebellious underground people to work against their leader and the government, but in conjunction with the leader of the government, who's actually not bad, to take down the evil brother and destroy the blimp that contains all the DNA so that they can start just having children naturally. And when they do that, they also find out that the world outside the city, which has big walls, is actually a livable world and not something that's horrible that no one can live in. And that's the end.
Also, they were getting pregnant anyway.
Yeah, they were getting pregnant anyway. It didn't even have to do with his experiment.
Yeah, yeah. So, kind of important point that we're leaving out is this is very loosely based on a very celebrated 1990s cartoon on MTV, originally written and I believe animated by, or just created by, Peter Chung, who is a Korean creator.
This movie has so little to do with the original series that if you actually watch in the credits of the movie, it says based on characters by Peter Chung. Not based on the story, based on characters that he created.
And Peter Chung actually came out and said that Aeon Flux is not in this movie.
Yeah, he said it was a travesty. He literally used that word.
Yeah, he apparently didn't think it was very good. And I wonder why, given that it does not follow his story at all?
You know what, though? In the movie's defense, the original story didn't actually exist either.
True, it was sort of surreal.
Avant-garde, I think, is the best.
Yeah, very avant-garde, very experimental.
So I never saw it, but I read about it and I heard that, like, apparently she was supposed to die. She did die at the end of the first five shorts. And then, like, they decided they wanted to keep doing it. So they brought her back and killed her at the end of each episode because he was never actually sure that he wanted her to be around. So he thought it could end at any time and he just wanted her to keep dying, which is a really fascinating thing.
Yeah, which also, I suppose, makes up for the idea of the clones, yeah.
Yeah, in one episode, apparently, she dies and comes back as a clone.
Yeah, I think this film is a problem of trying to take something that is, in a lot of respects, very abstract and trying to make it concrete. And when you do that, I think you take away what made the abstract thing very interesting.
Yeah, well, and according to the director, the studio took her cut and then, like, cut a bunch of stuff out of it and made it a different movie entirely. So she wasn't really happy with the version that they ended up using as the theatrical release. But I don't know, like, what the actual director's cut would have looked like. And I think that it's on the extended version DVD or something, and that Peter Chung knows it exists, but I don't know what he thinks about it either. Probably he still doesn't like it, because this doesn't really have a whole lot to do with his concept.
No, it really does. Yeah. So I guess that means we need to dive into our likes and dislikes. So we're going to start with our like. So, Julia, what is your first like?
Okay. Yeah, so this is actually kind of hard. But I'm going to go with the aesthetic of the movie overall. It had laughable costumes, but they were really interestingly designed. Like, I have no idea why anyone would sleep in the weird slave bikini choker thing that Charlize Theron was sleeping in the one scene. But it was actually still an interesting design costume, and so were all of the other clothes that people wore. And there was a general sense, like, I could tell when watching it that this was evoking an artistic anime sort of style. There were things that would happen that were very visually interesting, like when the handler for the mannequins was telling Charlize Theron her assignments, the colors and the ways that they were facing each other were interesting. And then, like, there's a point where she gives her information, which comes in the form of, like, a flower coming out of the handler's mouth and opening up, and Charlize Theron, like, getting pollen all over herself, which contains the information. And there's a lot of interesting stuff like that, where it was a visually interesting movie that I didn't mind watching. I also enjoyed the musical score. So, visually and musically, I was not opposed to this movie.
Yeah, it was actually specifically portions of it were filmed in the Bauhaus Museum in Germany. So you have a lot of that aesthetic going on. The scenes with the handler were filmed like an old veterinary clinic, or that was the autopsy room. So they did really interesting things with locations primarily in Germany.
Yeah, they filmed primarily in Berlin and Potsdam, and they used a lot of interesting things, including like the World Culture Museum.
And I do agree, like, visually, especially, yes, none of the fashion was practical, but to me it basically looked like everyone was wearing somebody's runway collection. And I found that very interesting.
It was totally interesting. I a lot of the time I was like, why would you choose to wear, like, why would you, if you are choosing to go on some sort of stealth mission, wear an all-white suit, Charlize Theron? That doesn't make any sense. But I was like, but your all-white suit is pretty interesting, so I don't mind.
And aesthetically, it did a pretty good job of matching the original series.
From the few images I was able to find of the original series, it seems to be the case, yeah.
Yeah, I think the TV series goes a little further with it, but I think it makes a good attempt at matching that. I personally would have liked to seen a little bit more. Like, the flower thing I thought was a really cool image. I would have loved more of that kind of imagery, that kind of, like, surreal.
I agree. I think they had some wasted opportunities. But we're trying to do likes now.
Yeah, exactly. We're sticking with the positives here, Sean.
I still like it. I still like it. I just want more. That's all I'm saying.
Kind of speaking on the clothes, though, that was actually one of the things I appreciated as a derivation from the original. Eon is actually dressed where she's wearing practically nothing in the cartoon.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things that I read about the original series was that it really relied heavily on graphic violence and sex, and particularly, like, dominance and submission and fetish stuff. And some of that sensibility was definitely there. There was a lot of male gaze going on in this movie. But I think they must have really toned it down to appeal to a wider audience, hopefully, because I don't know what this movie was rated, but I can't imagine it was more than PG-13.
Yeah, rated PG-13. Yeah, because I don't think they could have brought in any of that stuff that was in the TV series. I don't think they could have kept it in anything lower than an R.
It would have had to be a hyper-violent sort of Quentin Tarantino-esque Kill Bill-style thing if they were going to do the stuff that was in the original animated series, I think. And it wasn't. It was very much the kind of thing that, like, you could imagine somebody's teenagers going to see and no one minding.
Oh, yeah. It was highly controversial. I remember being fairly shocked by the imagery.
I imagine that if I had seen it, I would have been shocked. That was during the time when I was not allowed to watch MTV because my mom did not like MTV. So I never saw it when it was originally out. I was like, huh, this seems like something that, like, it was at a time that I would have heard of it. But it's because I wasn't allowed to watch MTV.
Yeah, and this definitely would have justified her dislike.
Yeah, she would have felt vindicated.
I know she saw a little bit of Beavis and Butthead, and she was just like, no.
I am the great Cornholio!
Exactly.
I need teepee for my bunghole!
I was basically not allowed to watch him either entirely because of Beavis and Butthead. Because my mom found it so repugnant.
My mom had something against music videos. I used to get this lecture where she would say, like, music videos are unhealthy, and I am not the only person who thinks that. There are people high in society who agree with me. Presumably she meant Tipper Gore, but...
All right. Let's go to Jen, then. Your first like, Jen.
I'm going to go with the fact that it actually had a reasonably diverse cast. Pleasantly surprised. There are multiple women of color. There are multiple men of color. But the two women specifically are fairly prominent roles.
Yeah, Freya and Sidathra.
Sithandra.
Sophie Okonedo was just fantastic.
She was awesome.
Sithandra. I wanted her to be in it the entire time. I don't at all remember the original series beyond sort of the graphic imagery and a couple of standout points. I don't remember it being particularly diverse, even having been written by a Korean American. But yeah, they did a really good job of creating a diverse cast in this. And it passes Bechdel. So not only diverse in terms of both color, but there are multiple women and they talk to each other consistently about things other than men. Although a lot of it is about the good children.
The good children? the good childs.
No, I'm just going with good children. It's much more interesting.
To be fair, one of them is basically a child, so.
Oh, totally. Johnny Lee Miller for the win. So that was a nice thing to see, particularly as it came out 11 years ago and we're still talking about how Hollywood regularly fails at putting a people of color.
Yeah, I 100% agree. And I was also impressed with the fact that, like, there were multiple, like I said, there was a lot of male gaze stuff going on, especially with, like, the costuming and the clothing and stuff. And a lot of the clothing was completely impractical. And I was like, why would anyone wear this to do the action stuff that they're doing? But it was still super neat to see, like, women talking to each other largely about things like overthrowing the government and the fact that they're sisters who disagree on how to handle problems with, like, overthrowing the government. And then, like, doing badass action sequences together and working together and having teamwork and sort of, like, if they had enmity, having it for reasons that were not, like, I'm fighting over a dude.
I liked the mentor-mentee relationship between Eon and Sithandra, which resulted in developments. So yeah, all in all, it was nice.
All right, let's jump to you then, Rachel.
I specifically want to say that my like is Sithandra herself, because I really liked that character. I actually found her more interesting than Aeon Flux, mostly because as soon as it was like, oh, I'm your dead wife's clone, which I will talk about at length later if someone else doesn't steal my main dislike. But Sithandra, actually, like, I wanted to know what her story was, and I was really interested in the fact that, you know, she'd had modifications, so she had an extra pair of hands instead of... And, you know, I just want to go write, like, lesbian fanfiction about Sithandra and Aeon, basically.
Seriously. Especially, like, in that first action sequence where they're together trying to get through the gardens, and I'm like, wow, so they're like a power couple. Why are they not a couple for the rest of the movie?
The more important point is when she trusses Zithandra and says, this used to be fun.
Well, and like at the end when, you know, Sathandra's up in like the tower with the sniper rifle and they're like having this deep discussion and like a single tear runs down her cheek and I'm going, oh, come on. Like, this is so much better than the stupid relationship with whiny McWhite boy who isn't the evil white boy. They're just like both white dudes and they look the same. And I got very confused because I didn't care about either of them. But anyway, that is not a like. My like is Sathandra because Sathandra is awesome. And I'm so like, oh, she should have survived. Aeon should have gone and like caught her. And then they could have like run into the sunset with the Zeppelin crashing behind them. But instead, Aeon just sat there and watched the best character in the movie like die. So, but I like Sathandra, even if I'm angry about how she died.
I wanted to know how she functioned in society, because they don't really show anybody else with modifications.
Although she hints to Aeon that maybe she should have it done.
Right, but there's kind of the idea that have modifications, you are not mainstream, you don't get to go out in public.
There were a lot of things about the way that this society works that if you, like, poke at them, completely fall apart and don't make sense.
Yeah.
That's valid.
All right, Trish, what's your like?
Well, my favorite likes have been taken already.
That's the hazard of being low on the list.
Just think what it's going to be like for me.
So what I will say is that for a movie that I never bothered to see because I'd heard how incoherent and bad it was, this was not such a bad movie. There were it actually was fairly coherent, even if there were problems with the logic. For instance, it asked and then answered some questions. For instance, when Aeon found out her sister had been reassigned as Sasha something, and I wondered if this is just one city, if they're mind-wiping people and putting new personalities in, they're going to run into their old acquaintances. And then it turned out, no, they were, you know, just recycling the DNA. So, I mean, it wasn't a good movie, but it was not a horrible movie, even though it makes me sad to think if people just run across this and think that's all Aeon Flux is and never go back to watch the original cartoons. But I'm afraid my like for this movie is a tepid, not so bad as I had thought.
This movie did not actually give me cancer.
It didn't make me want to stab knives into my eyes.
The entire time I was watching this, I could not stop comparing it to The Avengers from 1998 and thinking how much better it was than The Avengers from 1998. So I feel like I have to thank The Avengers for giving me that total, total deep low that allowed me to appreciate Aeon Flux more.
Wow. That we can go and edit that into the Avengers episode, Julia. That could be your like.
I feel like my like was like the furry random scene.
Were they wearing the bear suits?
I seem to remember that it was. I remember listening to that episode because that was mercifully before my time.
Like, why are they wearing the bear suits? There's no reason. See, if you want to talk about incoherent plots, that movie had an incoherent plot. This movie was so coherent comparatively.
Like, Sean Connery, his character wants to, like, destroy the world by controlling the weather. But why? Like, there's no reason for it. And then he's in a bear suit. He's trying to control the weather in a bear suit. Why?
Hey, he's a Grateful Dead fanboy.
It made no sense.
I have heard about that movie that there was a great deal more interesting plotty stuff in it, and the studio made the director dumb it down. But there was, since it was a complicated plot, the only thing he could do was remove plot elements, and therefore it made no sense.
Which is the same thing that happened to Aeon Flux, coincidentally. They were like, this is too artsy of a film.
That made me sad because I feel like I might have probably enjoyed the artsy version better, because the stuff that I actually liked about this movie was basically its artistic sensibility.
Oh, I really liked the aesthetics of this movie. That was my original like.
Sorry, I stole your like, Trish.
That's how it goes.
There's no crying in torture cinema.
I feel like we can let Trish go first on the dislikes so that nobody steals her dislike.
I like how Trish gets to go first. I'm last. I still have to give a like.
Talk about the shoes, Sean. It's an easy like.
I don't like shoes that much.
Oh, so he clearly wants to be Sathandra because he doesn't like shoes. Because that's what That's what Eon says. So Thander's like, you should have it done. And she's like, I like shoes.
It was the best line in the entire movie.
Except it's so deadpan. Oh, there's like no joy. There's no joy in this movie anywhere. Everybody is just so morose. They're just so like, I'm so sad about everything. This whole world is made up of like that guy from Birdemic.
No, everybody in this movie had more personality than the guy from Birdemic.
Not much, though. Not much more. Like, really. Ugh. Okay, to be fair, that guy has no emotion. Yeah.
You look fine.
I'm sorry, I've got, like, in a moment where I just was in his head, and just, like, it's just a vacuous emptiness, like space. It's very sad.
Is that how your head normally is?
Oh, sick burn, Jen. Oh!
Need some ice for that burn.
Not in Florida. We don't have ice here. We just melt. Okay. My like is, well, honestly, not much. So I'm just gonna go with the floating Uber zygote, which I thought was really kind of neat. And then when it was revealed to be an Uber zygote, that was really fun. So it was kind of a cool idea. And that's, of course, the part where we meet Pete Postlethwaite. And it's so cool because he plays this like weird old dude. And then you kind of figure out who he is. And like his story, I actually kind of wanted his story. I want to know that dude's story. That guy's lived for like 400 years.
I want to know why he lived for 400 years, but for some reason they decided everybody else just had to be cloned.
Dude, like, that should have been the question, right? Why didn't anybody go, you know, that guy in the giant Uber zygote has been alive the whole time. Maybe we need to be testing his genetics. What's the deal?
Because they don't understand science.
Well, of course they don't. They think science is kidnapping people in the night. Like, that's how they do statistical studies. They just randomly kidnap people and poll them about the election.
That might be more effective than what we do.
So, I thought that was a really cool, like, the design of it from the exterior and the interior designs was really neat. And I like the idea behind it, that it was put in place as a kind of reminder of the world before. So, like, everyone can kind of look up at it as, like, a monument, but it's constantly moving. But it's all kind of a ploy, right? It's actually housing all the genetic information, which I thought was a neat idea.
It looked like a giant floating sperm, which is funny, because it kind of was.
Well, I was going to say that, but I felt like zygote was a more appropriate term, because technically speaking, it's not sperm-like. It probably contains more ovum than it does.
Well, yeah, it contains a lot of stuff, but it totally looked like a giant floating sperm, which is pretty funny, because basically.
I want to know the purpose of the tail.
I think it's just adornment. It's just to make it kind of look pretty. Because that's what it's billed as, right? It's supposed to be like a monument.
It's so that that people have something to climb up when they're jumping onto it, right?
You gotta make sure those rebels have a way.
Contrived plot points aside, yes, of course, sure. But also because it's pretty. There you go, that's my like. It's simple.
Do you want to do your dislike now? We'll just go in reverse order and call it good.
I don't want to go first. I never want to go first on dislikes.
Then Trish.
Very well. I do have a very strong dislike. I disapprove really strongly of blowing up the clone bank, the DNA bank at the end. It seems to me that they were not ready for any kind of orderly transition. They had a few women having babies. They don't know yet, you know, how many of the population are going to be able to do that. They're going to lose all this genetic information. They caused a panic among the people. And basically, I am really, really tired of people who want to just blow stuff up, who don't like the current system and just want to blow stuff up. This applies to the finale of Battlestar Galactica, which I utterly hated, just sending all their information into the sun and starting out ignorant again. I just hate this plot point. I hate it in real life, too, with current people who say, you know, the two-party system is broken, so let's just
elect the guy who'll blow everything up?
Right, exactly. And I believe in building on things and making things better, not wiping the slate clean. I just hate that.
Yeah, it seemed to be anarchy for the sake of anarchy, which I think actually adhering to original story fairly well. I believe in the original cartoon, the Monacans were literally an anarchist society. There were two cities.
Right. In the original, though, you know, the city they were attacking was evil and the Monacans were good. Here, Trevor was back in power. He could have led an orderly transition. He could have extended the science. There was no reason to blow that thing up. No reason at all.
Yeah, the only way that I can read that as valid is if everybody was disillusioned with the fact that they'd been cloned and had to live the same lives over and over again, and were like, either like we actually rebuild a society without clones that works, or we all die, and either one is better than having to be reborn as clones again with these memories that aren't actually ours. They didn't actually give us that, but that's the only reading I could impose upon it that made any sense.
Yeah, if Orin had taken power after all, then okay, blow up the DNA zoo because there's nothing else to do. But with Trevor, I can't fathom why he would have wanted to just blow it up instead of, well, even taking it down and recycling it for parts. Why just blow it up over a populated city?
And this, Trish, is what makes you more mature than Ed Norton's character in Fight Club.
Thank you.
Wait, is it him that wants to blow it up or her?
It's him. And his alter ego, Tyler Durden.
Are we talking about Fight Club or are we talking about Ian Fleming?
Why the hell would you think we're talking about Fight Club?
Because we just talked about Fight Club.
Oh, I got really confused. I missed the Fight Club reference. So this whole time I'm like, everything's about this movie. And I'm like, what the fuck is going on?
And dear listener, coherent plots, not part of the Skiffy and Fandy show. Sorry.
No, nothing is coherent right now. I'm so confused. No, in Anne Flux. Is it her that wants it, or is it him?
Her.
She wants it, but he doesn't.
Yeah. No, he by the end, is fairly ambivalent.
He, like, doesn't want to do it, but, like, he's like, I'm not going to be able to stop her.
Well, he's the one who had the line, living like this is torture, we're just ghosts.
No, that was her.
But he, I think he would agree with it.
I think she's really upset about the fact that they're all clones and that she's a clone and that she has these memories that aren't hers and she feels like her life isn't hers.
Yeah, she was really upset about that. You're right, sorry.
Which really, she has no reason to bitch. She's only been cloned once. Seriously.
So, yeah, I was trying to think if this was actually more or less coherent than Jupiter Ascending.
It's less coherent.
No. No, 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 no.
Okay, well, let me put you this way. Which of these two of those two movies do you think I actually have on Blu-ray?
Jupiter Ascending?
It's Jupiter Ascending.
Because it's so fun. It's ridiculous.
I think Jupiter Ascending is terrible.
Oh, it is.
But there's a lot of things I like about Jupiter Ascending that this film does not give me. Like, for example, having Mila Kunis say, I like dogs, is, like, the funniest fucking line in that whole goddamn movie. Like, no joke.
But you have Charlize Theron saying, I like shoes. It's a toss-up. I like dogs, I like shoes.
Yeah, but, like, this is Charlize Theron who one day is going to be in Mad Max Fury Road.
Yeah, see, I think what happens is that in the continuation of this timeline, eventually the world runs out of water, and she's been cloned again, and she's really pissed. And then she's like, fuck it, I'm gonna drive a truck and kill all those bastards.
And she lost her arm, and she's like, god damn it, man. And like in poker, right? She's playing a poker match, and like she lost real bad, and she lost her arm. And that's why she's just grumpy.
Wait, she lost her arm in a poker?
Sean is making shit up now.
This is interesting headcanon.
Also, has found like a huge stockpile of that stuff that baseball players put on their cheeks, that black stuff. And that's like makeup for her for the whole time. Yeah, she got a massive stockpile.
I was pretty sure that was just like engine grease.
Look, in my weird version of reality, it's that weird baseball stuff.
But she's actually literally driving diesel things.
I know, but she's got like a little stockpile somewhere that she found, like an old factory, like buried in the dirt. And that's where she lived for like 6 weeks when she was trying not to get hunted down by people. And then she became a badass after she lost her arm in a poker match. And then she just started like going crazy shit and like running people over with her truck. And then like eventually got caught by that angry dude with the weird mask and like huge anger management problems. And then eventually fucked him up too by like ripping his face off.
I feel like that's probably the future clone of Orin Goodchild.
Sean, your headcanon is some of the best shit ever.
Yeah, Sean, yeah. Has anyone ever told you that you're a weirdie?
Yeah, all the time.
Every day.
I get reminded by somebody that I'm a weirdo every day.
So are we going in reverse like order? Should it be Rachel next?
Yeah, let's go Rachel. All right.
Okay, so Trish mentioned the plot point that she hates. I'm going to mention the plot point that I hate.
Ooh.
Which is, I am so, so done with the bullshit clones that somehow remember their previous lives thing. Because that's not how fucking science works. That's not how cloning works. Oh, it just makes me so angry every time I run across that. I'm just like, this, oh, ah! And I mean, the cloning was already... does anyone else want to talk about how stupid the cloning is? Because I'll talk about that, too.
I think you should just go for it. Just let loose, Rachel.
So, how is it that they are so scientifically advanced that they can fucking clone human beings and do all the genetic shit to do that and randomly impregnate people or, you know, cause chemical pregnancy so then they can implant embryos, blah, 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 and they can't fucking figure out how to make gametes and recombine DNA?
Over 400 years, no less.
Yeah, so, like, this is the thing that I don't understand. And so they're saying the problem is infertility, yet somehow women can still get pregnant and they can implant pregnancies. Okay, fine, but they can only implant clone pregnancies instead of, you know, making gametes and recombining DNA and making, like, actual for fucking real pregnancies? Are you shitting me? Like, I don't know who wrote this script, but I want to beat their head in with a biology textbook. Except I won't, because that would be violent, so instead I will sit down and we will have a cup of tea and I will tell them that they are so fucking wrong about everything that I might, like, blow an aneurysm because it makes me so angry. And I'm not even a biologist, I'm just a fucking rock scientist! And it still makes me angry.
Rachel, I have a question for you. Do you have any thoughts on sea snakes?
Oh! Don't get me started.
Well, I mean, this is the great thing. Is like, my housemate is actually, she has her bachelor's in microbiology, but I think the genetic cloning bullshit actually made me angrier than it made her. Like, I don't even know how to talk about this stuff. I just know it's wrong and I hate it.
It seems like any time a movie tries to, like, make a plausible science thing, it just fails miserably. Like, they should just stop with the pretense that they're trying to make something seem believable and just go balls to the wall crazy.
That would be less insulting in many ways.
Right, like Yodorovsky's Aeon Flux.
This is how you end up with Sean Connery trying to destroy the world by controlling the weather.
And the thing is, I don't know, there's like this whole like screenwriting truism about never let the facts get in the way of the truth. But I'm like, what kind of great artistic truth were you saying with your bullshit cloning story? Shut the fuck up.
There isn't any truth. Like, they're not trying to have an in-depth conversation about the human condition. Like, most of the things in this that would lead to that discussion are just glossed over. Like, the memory thing. She has these memories, and she has, like, five lines about it, and then that's it. Like, there isn't much discussion about it. It doesn't seem to be much more important than as a quick motivating thing to get her to do something.
Yeah, there's, like, nothing there about it anyway, even though that would have just made me angrier, and then I probably wouldn't have been on this podcast because I would have stroked out through sheer anger.
Please don't do that.
Yeah, please don't.
Since they ignored science so hard, I really wish they would have done what Sean said and gone harder for surrealism. Like I said, there were a lot of missed opportunities for things they could have had, trippy things they could have done about the way this society works. Is any of it even real, or are they just, you know, constructs in a big memory bank somewhere? Although I guess that would have been too much like The Matrix. But anyway, it could have been a much more interesting movie if they had just explored things instead of
doing whatever it is they did.
Yeah, like, there was also a lot that they could have done about, like, individuality and identity exploration that they really just didn't. I mean, if you're gonna use cloning and having memories that you feel like aren't your own as a thing that's, like, a really big bother to the main character, there are a lot of things that you can do with, like, what makes me me, that things like Blade Runner do, that this does not.
Right.
Yeah, so far the rant award goes to you, Rachel.
You win, A+.
We'll see if Jen can top it, though.
Oh, I'm not going to rant. I don't even have the energy to rant about this movie.
It just made you tired.
Basically, my dislike is the fact that this was essentially a horribly boring movie. There was just not enough going on. I mean, even the action sequences somehow managed to be too far apart and slightly slow. You never had a feeling of tension or danger. There were a couple of slightly hot scenes between Aeon and Trevor, but only slightly, because mostly it was completely vanilla. And this is especially disappointing given the fact that the original cartoon was basically this sort of surreal masterpiece. It was intense and insane and indelibly etched on my memory as fucked up beyond all belief. And then you have this, which is basically what you get when you mix mayo with white bread.
You mean delicious poor food? Hell yeah, give me some mayo and white bread. So maybe you need a better metaphor, Jen.
It's so standard science fiction fare that the things that could have been interesting, as Trish mentioned, they're not there. It is, as I said earlier, more coherent than the original series, because the original series made no sense because it didn't try to make any sense, which was fine. This one tries to make sense, and it does, to the extent that it goes from A to B in a very linear fashion. But that's not why I watch movies. I want shit to happen. Especially things that are kind of billed as action films, with these moments where you're like, yes, Charlize, you're a badass! Oh wait, that only lasted about 3 seconds, and now I have to watch the rest of the movie. It bored the fuck out of me, and that's why I was super disappointed.
I like how Jen's thing is basically just, I'm not mad, I'm just
I am! I wish I could be mad, but there's so many science fiction films that are basically exactly like this, that ignore science, and that mostly I'm just like, if you at least been exciting while ignoring the science or speculation or anything, then I would have forgiven you. But instead, I'm just left with wanting to take a nap while watching this. I mean, tell me if any of you were even remotely excited about any point in this film.
The bit with Aeon and Sithandra, like, running through the murder guard.
Yeah, that was the best sequence in the film.
And then they, like, didn't kiss, and instead we had to watch Aeon have, like, super grody slow motion kisses with, like, white boy.
The pacing was so bad. It didn't jump from point to point fast enough. Instead, it lingered on really stupid shit. Trying to be avant-garde and surreal and artistic, and instead just being kind of boring.
Yeah, I will add to that that one of the things that kind of really really slowed it down for me was the way that it would just stop everything to have people have conversations with the handler, which always happened very slowly and really broke up anything that might have been interesting that was happening on screen. So that was, I feel like they were trying to go for a certain effect there, but they failed, and instead what we got was something that just stops the action, takes you out of the story, and just makes everything feel slower.
And the dreams had the same effect for me.
They're just not interesting dreams. Like, she's having a dream of her walking on the street, and then, like, we get that scene at the end, and I'm like, okie dokie.
Except that they didn't even bother doing a full exploration of the dream until the very end. So you had very disjointed, blurry images throughout the rest of the film that, to be honest, could have just been dreams of her childhood or youth. There was nothing to disconnect them from the time that they existed in at the present point of the film.
This is one of those moments, I feel like, where the dream sequence was intended to be something very important, but where in the end it turns out to be just kind of meh, because, like, well, the moment is okay. Like, it's kind of cute. Like, they clearly gone on their first date, and, like, he's really smitten, and she's smitten, and then they say goodbye to each other, and he kind of is like, will I ever see you again? And she just smiles, and it's, like, kind of cute, and you think that's going to be the romantic comedy, but, like, there's nothing else of that.
Oh my god, I wish this were a romantic comedy. That would have been amazing!
I would love to see Martin Soka in,
oh my god,
in a freaking romantic comedy, because he's always playing, like, weird Hungarian or Eastern European villains. He's like, that's all he ever is in anything.
And he really should just be playing the hot guy in every movie.
He is an attractive man.
Very.
But yeah, like, I feel like the dream is made up to be something that's really, really important. And then by the time you actually see the whole scene of what's happening at the very end, it's just anticlimactic.
It is, because the only time we get sort of memories or dreamlike elements that kind of explain that past, it's not from her. It's from the Keeper, or from him. And I think that's really frustrating, because it could have been a thing where, like, these dreams are, like, really affecting her, right? She's having these dreams. Like, why don't they show, like, her getting ill? Or, because, like, clearly she died from whatever the illness is, right? So show her getting ill. Show their romantic moments when they fell in love. Like, show these really impactful moments and the death, so that there is some traumaticness to this, other than just, like, oh, yeah, we met on the street and, like, we were both smitten. And that's supposed to be traumatic.
Yeah, and there's no explanation why she somehow would have distracted him from the goal of having kids or doing what he needed to do. So that means that Orin has actually been planning this whole, we're going to stick with this type of society forever. He's been like that for 400 years.
I have to admit, like, okay, I was so bored and having such a hard time paying attention to certain parts of this movie. I didn't even realize that there were these dream things going on until the end, and then I was like,
and then that was the moment you realized there was another movie they could have made that might have been really cute, and they didn't make it.
I really want this romantic comedy now. I demand that you write the fanfic.
Like, that would be an adorable comedy. It'd be Martin Soga and Charlize Theron.
With Zathandra.
Yeah, I was going to say, I'd have to refuse to write that, though, because it would have to be, like, the romantic triangle between...
Just make it polyamorous.
Oh, a polyamorous... romantic comedy starting Mark Ahsoka. Oh my god, yeah. Let's do it. Right now, we're pitching that shit to freaking Hollywood.
Let's be clear, though. This is a polyamorous romantic comedy starring him, Charlize Theron, Sophie Okonedo, but she has hands for feet.
Yes. Oh my god. So sexy.
I just want this to take place right now in this world and be like, just talk about your surreal quotient. Just sort of like, by the way, she has hands for feet. But it takes place in 2016.
And like, never explain it. Never explain it. Like, she just like randomly picks up shit off the floor.
Some of our listeners occasionally write us fanfic, and I feel like this is a challenge for you listeners.
I'm just imagining, like, the funny scenes of, like, the things she picks up with her feet hands.
Like, was it Samuel Becker who wrote us the Transformers Pizza Place fanfic? If you're still listening, we got a challenge for you. I'm sorry to say that you have to watch Aeon Flux in order to write this fanfic.
You don't really. There's not really much character there. You just give them the right name.
You gotta watch Zathandra, though. You gotta watch the action sequence where Zathandra and, Eon run through the murder guard, and then you watch the last scene.
Yeah, that's it. We'll take those. I'll cut them out for you. I'll get an AVI of this, and I will cut those two out and put them together for you on a 6-hour loop, so you can just watch them over and over and over, so you really get
can
a feel.
Can you just put that on YouTube, Sean? Just to do the cut of that on loop for 6 hours and make it a YouTube video?
God, wouldn't that be something?
It would be something.
It would be something. That is an accurate statement.
Please do your dislike before Sean continues.
So my dislike. Okay. I mean, there's so much to choose from, but I'm going to go with, even though this movie had a lot of women in it, and that was awesome, and they passed the Bechdel test, and I really enjoyed the Zathandra and Eon running through the garden sequence, I was disappointed in the way this movie depicted women in a lot of ways. And I've talked a little bit about the male gaze stuff, but like, that's one of the things. Like, in almost every single instance, women were wearing things that were specifically there to call your attention to them being hot. Like, they were often wearing corsets. They were wearing very skin-tight spandex suits. They were wearing high heels. They were wearing things with, like, weird decolletage that weren't quite boob windows, but kind of. And there was just a lot of, like, really weird choices that I couldn't imagine these women choosing to wear for the reasons that they were wearing them, and really knew that the reason they were wearing them was so that we would look at them and think, that woman is hot and I would like to have sex with her, which is very sad and objectifying. And then, like, adding to that the fact that, like, you have the first important relationship between Eon and Una, and immediately Una is fridged so that Eon can have her revenge. It's sort of, at first I thought they were going to make it so that the Monikens had actually orchestrated that to make her do what they wanted, but it turned out no, it was just Oren killing her because she was pregnant. And it was sad to me that was like, okay, you have like, I thought this was going to be an interesting source of tension where there are these two sisters who disagree on an ethical level about the way to handle the problems within their society that might grow throughout the movie. And instead, nope, they just killed her to get Eon to feel bad and want revenge. And then, like, Sithander dying at the end, too. It was just sort of, But, like, even the handler wearing the clothes that she's wearing, where it's, like, this weird corset thing that shows off her breasts, even though she doesn't really have giant breasts. And I don't know. There were a bunch of things in the movie that kind of just turned me off a little bit and made me sad.
I want to say one thing about the death of Una that I did like was that Una was not Eon's sole motivation for joining the revolution. She was not an empathy machine for Eon. Eon had already been involved in the revolution, thinking about other people's sufferings without a known personal connection. She didn't have to have somebody close to her die for her to care about the lives of other people. So I liked that, at least.
No, I agree with that, but it seemed like they were also using her anger at Una's death to spur her on to agreeing to kill Trevor. Because, like, even when she has the conversation with the handler's like, if you do this, you can have your revenge.
Yeah, I sort of felt like she would have happily killed Trevor before Una was killed, but Una's death was that extra sort of, okay, now he's fucking dying.
Yeah, like the insurance.
Yeah, but it doesn't actually come to anything because she just stops trying to kill him at one point. Right? And like has these really confusing things, but then she has sex with him and then she's like, oh, I'm going to choke you to death.
And she's like, why do I always feel like this around you?
Because they don't understand how clones work. That's why you feel that way around him.
Well, and also we don't know either. She's feeling something, but we don't know what the fuck she's feeling. It's very confusing, right? Because really what she's supposed to be feeling are feelings of love. But I'm sorry, there's nothing indicated in what is presented to us in the directed acting there that would say, oh, this is somebody having very deep love feelings. This is somebody like having traumatic feelings, which may go to what is my dislike. But
well, I guess it's time for your dislike, so just segue right on in.
I hate the sex scene.
Oh, was there a sex scene?
Yeah, Charlize Theron and Trevor get it on at one point.
Yeah, I like how he just gets his character name. yeah, so Charlize Theron and Martin Soka, they have a sex scene of sorts. And the issue I have with this scene is she's clearly in a very vulnerable state. And from all outward appearances, exactly as I said before, right, it appears that she is reacting from a trauma of some kind. Whatever that is, it's not exactly made clear to us at that moment. We find out later it's because she's having these weird memories and that, yeah, it's because she feels feelings of love. But then, like, he just kind of, like, takes advantage of her in this sex scene. And that really kind of bugged the shit out of me because I'm like, dude, like, you love this woman. This is, like, your wife lady or was your wife lady or sort of kind of is your, like, sort of wife lady. But, like, she has no freaking clue who you are. So you're still going to, like, have sex with her instead of, like, sitting down and being like, hey, listen, sweet cheeks, like, maybe we should have a talk about what's happening right now.
Sweet cheeks.
I don't know what their nicknames for each other were. Like, maybe she called him Bubble Bear and he called her Sweet Cheeks.
Can you please say wife lady again?
Wife lady.
Oh my god. Okay, keep going.
But the point is, like, he doesn't ever sit down and, like, explain to her. Even though clearly he should. In this moment, he should be like, there's a reason why, and, like, here's the deal. And then she should actually have her, like, existential crisis where she's like, nah, you're full of shit. You're just lying to me because you're all about propaganda. And then he's like, oh, whatever. And then she finds out the truth, right? And then afterwards, like, she goes to him and then, like, have, like, a long talk. And then she realizes, oh, my God, I love you. And then maybe they do it, right? Maybe then.
Yeah, he's suffering operating from a position of power, which he then abuses.
Yeah, it's totally unethical that he has sex with her.
And it's unnecessary. That it doesn't need to be here. That, like, we can have a steamy sex scene later.
Especially because she actually literally asks, like, why do I always feel like this around you? And instead of answering her, he doesn't say anything and then they kiss.
Right? Like, just say it. I'm your former husband in a past life. And then, like, I get it. Like, that does never work. That's only works for Barney and How I Met Your Mother.
He was trying to trigger her epigenetic memory.
Oh, Christ. Oh.
I just want to say that before you said in How I Met Your Mother, I was picturing him being Barney the Purple Dinosaur.
Oh my god, I would watch that TV show. Martin Soka as Barney? Oh my god, yes. Somebody write that fan fiction.
Talking about surreal quotient, upping the surreal quotient. Just have Charlize Theron in a giant purple dinosaur.
There's probably a fetish site for it already, to be honest.
Fair enough. But anyway, yeah, there are a lot of issues, I think, gender-wise with this film. I mean, the fact that, like, almost all of the speaking roles in the biggest positions of power are men, with the exception of in the rebel team that is run by a woman, but it's not clear exactly what her power is.
Yeah, none of the whole society didn't really make any sense. And, like, it does make more sense if the Monikans are from a different city and it's the anarchist city and they're trying to infiltrate the police state city. But they're not. They're just, like, an underground revolutionary faction that I don't really understand.
I also, like, I don't understand the need for secrecy. Like, just say, yo, all, we almost all died from this thing and now we can't have babies. I'm trying to figure it out, y'all. Let's, like, just chillax. And, like, if you just told people that, like, they're not gonna freak out if they know, like, it's cool, you won't die, you'll just have to, like, raise your weird clone babies, it'll be fine. I just feel like there's an unnecessary, the secrecy is for something that isn't a big enough secret. Like, we don't need it. And, like, everyone's keeping secrets from everyone, and the only one keeping any good secret is the asshole whiny white boy. Like, he's the only one keeping a secret that makes sense he would keep that secret. I'm trying to kill my own brother. Yeah, I would keep that secret too.
Can we talk about how this movie is essentially just men versus women? I mean, like, the men even have, like, sperm, you know, symbology.
Well, and the men are, you know, secretly impregnating women.
Yeah, and, like, the weird bullet things that go out in the garden that just, like, shoot out little tiny droplet things that can hit people. There's definitely no surprise that one of the other things that I thought of a lot while watching this was Zardoz.
Penis is bad. Gun is good.
I thought a lot about the scene where Sean Connery gets an erection and everybody claps.
He's wearing the orange diaper. I don't know why we're having this conversation.
Because we don't want to talk about this movie.
That's fair. Yeah, but anyway, so, like, gender stuff and like that, and the sex scene just need to burn in a fire.
Yeah, I will say the sex scene, while it was not great, made me feel slightly less awkward than the really long sex scene in The Postman.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, God, where it's like Kevin Costner's tongue just everywhere? Yeah.
Yeah, and it's just like Kevin Costner's ego on display for us in all its naked glory for a long time.
They mostly glossed over the sex in this.
The sex scene in this movie did not bother me nearly as much as the super gross slow motion tongue kissing, and I understand that there was a point to it, like, she was getting a thing out of his mouth so she could, like, go talk to the handler or whatever, but it was still, I was just like, oh, why?
I don't ever want to see that. Like, that's not fun for me, like, watching people's tongues flopping around, like, that's just weird.
And then, like, every time she's kissing Trevor or whatever, it's just like, you know, dogs colliding, I don't know.
It's just continuing with the phallic impregnation imagery.
There were a lot of things that made me feel, like, slightly uncomfortable and then, like, disappointed. Like, for instance, there's the thing where, like, she goes down into down the stairs that magically open up, and then, like, this weird tentacle thing grabs hold of her, and you're like, whoa, weird tentacle thing, is this gonna go to a weird hentai place? And it's like, no, I'm just gonna, like, activate the holodeck for you. Done.
I was hoping for a hentai.
And not even an exciting holodeck. Like, it's just, like, some beakers and shit. Like, come on.
No. No, but it was very much, like, coded as this is gonna be weird tentacle sex rape crap. And I was like, oh, I feel awkward about this. And then I was like, I feel even more awkward now that it just opened a holodeck.
I don't think it was a holodeck. She was actually getting transported. No, she was, because she gets shot by Freya, and it goes through her, because she's not there anymore.
So add that to the technology that they have that's spectacular, you know, teleporting.
But pregnancy.
It was basically another thing that just didn't make any sense in this movie.
It's amazing that they have technology that can phase you into a slightly different dimension where there's a lab, but they still can't figure out how to make fucking Gammy.
That's really hard, okay?
Yeah, making babies is super hard work, Rachel.
Good God. And besides, like, it's a society mostly run by men. And let's be honest, right? These are going to be, like, the last people on the planet to figure that shit out. I mean, keep in mind, right, that the people who actually solve the infertility crisis are women.
That's true. They just spontaneously start getting pregnant again.
It's the magical lady trope, yeah.
Vaginas are magical.
Magical vagina trope, I guess would be the better term. Yeah. Your vaginas just figure that shit out. And they're just like, okay, we're done.
I mean, technically speaking, shouldn't it be like the uterus that figures that out?
Well, okay, you know what I mean. The whole bits. It all worked together and it said, we're fertile now. Ha ha! And that's how it works.
I think we should keep making Sean talk about our bits. Because it's amusing me.
God. I think we should not talk about that anymore. I think we should end this because we've all done our likes and dislikes.
Ovaries.
Is that your final grade on this movie, Sean?
If I could give ovaries as a grade, that would be great. But alas, I can't give that as a grade, no.
Sean, you run this podcast. You can give it whatever grade you want.
Yeah, but that's not what I write down on the website. Ovaries is not currently a grade.
It could be, though.
Okay, let's grade this darn movie. So, Julia, what would you give this movie?
I'm going to give it a C-. It's really not the worst thing we've seen. And there were, like, things that I liked about it aesthetically, but it's not a good movie. It's not enough to make me want to watch it again or anything. But it's not terrible. I would choose to watch it again over some other movies that we've watched.
That's fair. I think that's fair. All right, Jen?
I'm just going to give it a C. Like, I'm with Julia. Not that bad. Comparatively, it was mostly just too boring to give it anything else. Kind of got to go middle of the road.
You're basically just saying it was painfully average.
It was painfully average. That's really what it suffers from, yes.
I feel like all of us could probably agree on that.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Rachel.
Well, I would give it an F, except I really did like the shoes. So instead I will give it a D.
Like, also Sithandra and that action sequence and the way that they should have kissed afterwards.
How have we not actually talked about the shoes yet?
Shoes have been mentioned, I think, more times than many things that we could have talked about this movie.
They were good shoes, and I mean, that should have been talked about during my costuming and aesthetics, like...
You know, they've got, like, a little secret compartment in the heel. I mean, come on.
Why didn't they check her shoes?
Because everyone in that society is a moron!
Oh! That's a really good point. All right, so Rachel, what was your grade again?
D.
D. All right, Trish, go.
C-. It just, you know, it would be okay to have on the TV if I couldn't find anything better and I was folding laundry or something.
That's pretty good criteria.
It is definitely a laundry folding movie.
Because you can look away and not miss anything. And then you can look back and be like, oh, that's an interesting costume. I'm going to go put this laundry away now. And then come back and be like, oh, I didn't really miss anything.
I really wish that we could get the rights to, like, make our own, like, of those DVD cover sleeves, you know, that go on there. With, like, our own quotes about the movie in it, and, like, our own description of what the movie's about. That would be just so much fun.
Well, I mean, you can do that with Photoshop, and it's considered to be parody, so it's fair use.
Awesome. You just gave me another reason not to do my dissertation.
You're welcome, citizen.
All right. My final grade, I would also give it a C-. It's just painfully average. It's not the worst movie we've ever watched. It was not painful for the most part. It was just whatever, you know. I don't know if I would watch it while folding laundry, though. I probably would keep surfing for something else.
You just watch Mac and Me again.
I would fucking watch that over this any day of the week.
We know you'd actually go watch Sphere for the scene with the snake.
No, fuck the goddamn snakes. No. Ah, I gotta feed my snakes tonight. Now I'm all gonna be thinking about is the rage I feel. Like, they're not fucking sea snakes. They're not sea snakes. You got it wrong. Shut up.
Movies that don't understand biology.
Clearly, I'm going to need to go watch the Sphere podcast.
Yeah, you need to listen to it. There is some epic rage.
The Sphere podcast is, it has one of the best genres I've ever heard.
Yeah,
in.
Jen, you need to transcribe the Sphere podcast.
I'm working my way back, slowly but surely.
So Rachel, it's not that they don't get science, like in the movies we watch, like this one or Sphere or whatever. It's like that they don't even try to get science. Like, they don't just, like, ask a biologist and pay a biologist, like, $50. Be like, hey, like, are our facts right here? Like, they don't even bother to do that.
I think they basically just ignore it. There's that whole idea in Hollywood that nobody gives a shit anyway. So why bother?
That is true. Given the kind of films that they do make, like The Last Airbender.
Like, on these cheery, cheery, cheery notes, are we going to end this podcast?
Yeah, we're done. We're totally done. So if you'd like to let us know what you think, you can send us emails, skiffyandfanty@gmail.com. You can also yell at us at Twitter, @skiffyandfanty. We're also on the Facebooks. I think we're just like the Skiffy and Fanty Show. I don't know what the Facebook page is. I think it's like facebook.com/skiffyandfanty. I clearly know what I'm doing right now. And you can support us on Patreon at patreon.com/skiffyandfanty. If you, do support us, let us know and like awesome things will come your way. Also, it is very likely we're going to be doing a charity drive to do a Batman vs. Superman extended cut episode listener request.
Extended cut?
Yes, it's like 3.5 hours long.
Wait, did you just say extended cuts?
Yeah, it's like the director's official cut. It's like 3 or 3.5 hours long.
Holy shit!
Yes.
No, that movie was long enough already, man. I had to watch it for Worldcon. It was so long.
I bring that up because we are interested in figuring out which charity would be the right charity to do this for. So if you have any ideas, feel free to send us an email or a tweet. You know, we could do like, I don't know, there's something. You can think of ideas. Send us ideas and we'll talk about it. So you can tell how enthusiastic everyone on this podcast is about doing this. So you know it's going to be a good episode.
It's going to be amazing, and I will just go buy, like, an entire bottle of rum.
I mean, you kind of have to buy an entire bottle of rum. They don't sell, like, half a bottle of rum.
Well, I mean, like, a big entire bottle. I've had a long day, okay?
You can go to Sam's Club now and get your half-drunken bottle of rum. $9.99. Get a whole case of half-drunken bottle.
That's a Florida special, I think.
God, that would be Florida man, like, drinks half a bottle of rum and takes it back to Sam's Club. That sounds like an actual thing. Oh, Florida. All right, so we're done. We're done. So on that note, everyone, have a good night. Thanks for listening. Bye.
Bye.
Bye. Bye-bye now. Bye-bye.
Our intro and outro music comes from Nocturnia by Psychedelic Pedestrian. You can find out more about them on freemusicarchive.org, including the full version of the song. We obviously made some edits to the song, including sound effects and, of course, shortening the length. You can also support us by going to patreon.com/skiffyandfanty. If you'd like to send us a suggestion, you can do so at skiffyandfanty@gmail.com. You can also go to our website, skiffyandfanty.com, and check out the little suggested topic form at the top there. You can also just send us emails. You can also find us on Twitter @skiffyandfanty or on Facebook @The Skiffy and Fanty Show. Just search for us on there. Thanks for listening, and we hope to see you next time.